Sean is one of a kind. I adore this man. He left Ireland. I wonder, did he even have a plan? You, my pal, yeah, you, my friend, are loved all over. A massive rugby fan who was 46 years sober. And as for God, I think he couldn't give a damn. Sean, take as long as you need, man, and thank you again for speaking. You are incredible, man.
Thank you.
And please, everyone, stay on mute because it's just rude. Thank you, Sean.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Mark, for asking me. And you'll get in the doggerel yearbook, I'm sure. Anyway, I'm Sean. I'm an alcoholic. And thanks very much for asking me to come along here. And thank you to yourself and Jimmy for all the service you do, like, for the it's great, like, that there's kind of an international organ, an international movement of a of secular meetings now. Anyway, as I said, like, the actual last meeting that I went to, face-to-face meeting, was in Paris, secular meeting in Paris on a Friday night. Because I'd gone over for the rugby, which had been cancelled, like, and but I went anyway. Like, I thought it'd be a great time to go over to Paris when there's not busloads of Chinese queuing up to get into the museums, and so we had to rush back anyway. And that was the last meeting I went to, Friday night in Paris. Anyway, the thing about I'm Sean and I'm an alcoholic, and that's kind of foundational to my life. It's kind of almost in my DNA. It's the kind of Archimedean point in my life that I'm an alcoholic. Everything revolves around that, because if I drink, I'm fucked. So I've got to remember that above all else. Like, all I've got to do is breathe in and out and not drink, and then that I'm a free man, so to speak. I suffer from alcoholism as my disease. I don't suffer from ism, it's alcoholism. I kind of got very ill from pouring vast quantities of alcohol down my gullet. That's why I ended up in AA. It's very important for me to sort of tell you what I'm recovering from, which is the alcoholism and how it affected me. As I was saying earlier, I come from Wexford, and I kind of went off to Dublin when I was 17. I kind of left school, and I was 16, in fact. And I started drinking in Dublin when I was 16-year-old. Donoghue's and Merrion Row, which, for those of you who don't know, it's a very famous pub in Ireland. It's where the folk revival kicked off, like, back in 64. And I used to go there, like, as a boy, like, 16, 17-year-old. And I'd be in there, all the Dubliners used to be in there regular, like, sort of knocking back sort of vast quantities of Guinness. And I'd be in there standing at the bar with them, like, and spitting just like a grown up. Anyway, right from the beginning, I started having what I later came to see as manifestations of alcoholism with my drinking. Like, I was having blackouts from the beginning. I was having problems with landladies from the beginning. So anyway, I decided, like, England was always our aspiration back then. Nearly everybody went to England. It was the Beatles and French Letters. They were the big, things we wanted, like, and so off to England I trotted anyway. I told the boss, I worked as a barman there. I was an apprentice barman, as it was at the time. And I told my boss to take his job up his arse, like, the week before Christmas. And I arrived over in London anyway. And so that was it. So I was having all of the things that happened to kind of drunks happened to me very early on. I was arrested for being drunk, didn't have a clue, like blackouts, etc. Sacked from jobs for being drunk. Homeless, a lot of couch surfing, although we didn't call it couch surfing then. I remember when I first went to Cricklewood, I can assure you the crack wasn't good at all in Cricklewood. And as I say, like, right from the beginning, there was major problems with alcoholism. So what happened then, between then and when I stopped drinking at 28? It wasn't that I drank more. In actual fact, I probably drank a lot more, like, in my earlier years, because I worked as a barman and I drank all day, every day. Like, and then I kind of got sacked from job. I couldn't take it anymore. Like, a drink couldn't take me. And I started working on the buildings. But at the end of my drinking, I could drink far. I was drunk on far less than I was at the beginning. At the beginning, I could go days. In actual fact, I went weekends drinking nonstop. I was always drunk and falling over drunk, always. I was never one of these people who was very drunk and in blackout and didn't look drunk. I always was drunk, but I could go on, and I went 24 hours, 72 hours. I remember going to Belgium, places like that, on a cultural trips, and you'd end up sort of drinking the whole weekend, like nonstop, and falling asleep in bars or whatever or on the street. Anyway, so that was it. As to how I was, I really didn't. I there was no alternative to this way of life, like, you know, like, and, you know, like, there was days, like, you know, like, when I'd wake up in my bed, not having a clue about how I'd got there, sort of soaked in my own piss, so cold, the piss is almost frozen. And this happened time and time again, like, you know, like, it wasn't a one-off. And so there was nothing joyous about my drinking at all. Like, the only thing about it was better than not drinking. And not drinking was a horrendous state of being, like, you know, like, and so hence I felt I had to carry on drinking. So anyway, what happened to me as I was working on building sites, and I kind of had a couple of convulsions on building sites, and the second one, they wouldn't let me back to work until I'd been cleared by the doctor, because that's fair enough, like, you know, when you're on the 25th floor of a building, like, you know, and have a convulsion, well, they don't want to have to go to the trouble of picking you up, like, and putting you in a barrel, like, do they? So anyway, so then after that, like, I remember the kind of for 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 months or whatever, I became a dishwasher, a plongeur, because that was easy. You got instant money. It was a bit like working on the buildings, like, you worked with an Irish subby, and you got paid daily, like, because they knew you would be back again the next day, like, you'd have paid you daily for your alcohol vouchers for that evening, like, you know. So so then I was going around, I was a dishwasher, and I always remember, like, my good mate Alistair from Aberdeen, like, who's much like myself, obviously, and we were going around, we'd go around looking for dishwashing jobs, like, and I remember we'd go to the smart hotels down Park Lane and go along the staff entrances at the back, where human resources would have been, like, human resources. Anyway, looking for dishwashing jobs, like, and I remember on numerous occasions, like, the security man would take one look at us and decide that they didn't want dishwashers of our type, even if they did fucking desperate for them, like, you know. So that was it anyway, like, and I kind of, there was I, my 28 years of age, and I felt my life was done, well and truly done. Now, I'd known about AA for many years, I'd had a great deal of respect for AA, because a friend of mine, a guy who I knew, I met him actually drinking. And some years later, like, Nicky Fleming was his name. He was from Cork. And I met him in a place, like, it was a shebeen. That's a non-licensed sort of hole in the ground somewhere where it's open at all hours in the morning. And Nicky always reminded me of this. Like, the highlight of this place, it had two televisions, both in black and white. Like, one was for sound and the other was for picture. But anyway, some years I used to meet Nicky around the streets after Nicky had joined AA, like, and Nicky did always tell me he was in AA. I thought AA was great because it had sorted Nicky out. So, and Nicky was a decent man, like, he wasn't a god bother or anything like that. And I decided I was going to go to AA. Like, I looked it up to see where it was, and it was around the corner from where I had my bedsitter in Earl's Court, this hovel I lived in. And I decided I was going to go there on Monday. So that I did. I went for some drinks first, as you do. And I was trying to kind of shake off my friends. Back then, the pubs were closed at 3 o'clock every day, and you had the 3:30, 3 o'clock to 5:30. And I remember I went with these friends of mine. We went to the ABC Cafe, where we drank a cider from teacups, And I was trying to sort of, I thought, if these people of my friend, these people, my acquaintances, my drinking mates, if they knew now that I was going to Alcoholics Anonymous, like, you know, like that would be the pits, like, you know, like, fuck me, he's bad enough, isn't he? Like, and now he's going to Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, how low can you go? Like, you know, he really is the pits. So anyway, I kind of left them and I went off to Redcliffe Gardens just down the road. And I spoke in there. Mary was there. Mary was a lady who ran the office, and there was another guy came in there whilst I was there, and read Ronnie Cohen, Ronnie C. Like, Ronnie lived in South London, had been sober a long time then. Ronnie actually moved back from London to Wexford some years back. He's dead now, So I remained friends with Ronnie for many, many years. I used to go and visit him in Wexford and I was down around that way, and his wife. So anyway, they asked me, someone asked me there if I really want to stop drinking. And I remember my response to that was, well, fucking hell, what do you think I'm doing here? And then someone else asked me if I've had a drink today. And I said, well, if I could have not had a drink today, I really wouldn't have been here. I didn't say that, but I remember those being my thoughts. So anyway, I kind of, Mary then took me, she was going to a meeting in Talgarth Road, which was down on West Kensington. And she was going to a meeting down there, and she took me down there with her. Now, Mary was a very well-dressed, blue rinse, Northern Irish lady. And there was me looking like a tramp. And I was embarrassed about walking up the road and meeting my friends, seeing me with this well-dressed woman, like, and they're going to think, what's he doing with her, like, you know. And I remember meeting Mad Alex. Mad Alex was one of my compatriots. He's a man from Inverness, like, you know, who I drank with. And but anyway, we went to the meeting, and I think Mary had to pay my fare because I didn't have any money. Anyway, I remember going to this, and there was a guy who I drank with at the meeting, and that rather embarrassed me. And then I thought, well, oh, he's probably here for the same reason as myself. He probably obviously is. And he said to me, Sean, that's your seat there. We reserved it for you. We knew you'd be alone. And I thought that was a rather nice welcome. But I do remember thinking there was probably about 12 people at the meeting. And as far as I was concerned, this AA business, like, it was going to get me out of the shit for about 3 or 4 days, because I'd done not drinking, and I'd done stopping drinking. It worked for me sometimes for a half an hour, sometimes for a half a day. It's worked for 28 days, three times. See, I can quantify all these times, like, when I stopped drinking. I never got to 29 days. I got to 28 days, and I well remember the reason why I went back on the drink the last time I was off it for 28 days before I went away. It was cup final day, and Fulham were playing West Ham in the final, and I kind of was down North End Road in Fulham in the morning, and I was probably buying vegetables or something, because when you stop drinking, you eat and all that sort of thing. Like, and I decided anyway, I was a Fulham supporter. And I thought, I'll go and have a few pints. And that was it. So I didn't need much excuse for to go back to drinking. Basically, if there was a D in the day, I'd go back. That was good enough. So anyway, yeah, but I thought, this is sad, this. It's very sad now what I've come to. But then I remember thinking, well, my life is very sad, like, you know. And it's not just the previous year. And I kind of came to see all of it was very sad. Like, the whole, it was the most negative experience you could possibly imagine, my life as a drunk. Anyway, so I'm in AA there, like, and someone does the chair, and I'm identifying, and everybody comes in and cheers, and I identify with them all. And they're all telling my story. And I see, this is it. This is my way out. This is it. I don't have to drink again. And I got, as I keep on saying, I got the, I got really the whole secret of AA at my first meeting. Like, you know, like, I wasn't capable of taking much on board, but I was capable of taking on board of not drinking a day at a time and going to meetings. And I was suggested getting to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I thought that was a heavy sentence until I kind of considered my previous 90 days or any 90 days. as I say, like, I'd never really, I came to understand, I hear people in the, at the meetings talking about crossing over the thin red line into alcoholism. I never crossed over. I started off on the kind of alcoholism side of it, like, and the all of my life as a drinker, it was all rather a downward spiral. So then there am I now, I'm in A, and I'm think this is wonderful. This is the solution. At the time, I had agoraphobia, which was kind of left over from the convulsions. And I was terrified of walking over the bridge. I had to walk over to get home. Like, but anyway, I went home and I was elated, absolutely elated that I had a way out. And I remember for my first 3 nights in AA, I didn't sleep a wink because I was so excited. And I had to get up on the Thursday morning. I had to get up and go down to the hospital, St. Stephen's as it was then, Chelsea and Westminster, to see this consultant about my epilepsy. Anyway, I had intended having a bath. Now, I had hydrophobia. I was terrified of getting into the bath in case I had a convulsion in there. So I didn't wash very often. Not if I hadn't had hydrophobia, I wouldn't have washed very often. So anyway, I kind of had intended getting up and having a bath in the morning before I went to the hospital. So it was this sort of smelly sort of object. Wasn't appearing in front of the consultant, and I fell asleep when I was supposed to get up, so I had to go down to the hospital reeking. As I say, I only had the clothes I stood up in when I came into AA, like, you know, so that meant underwear and socks. I mean, my first week in AA, like, I remember my socks decomposed, and so that was me sockless then until my gyro came. For any Americans, gyro is your unemployment benefit. So there I am now. So this is secular I'll tell you how I've negotiated the whole business. At my first meeting, things were going wellish until I heard the word God mentioned. I think I probably heard higher power, and of course my response to what the fuck's that like, you know? And it wasn't the sort of thing like we kind of discussed amongst my drinking friends, you know, like, do you hand things over to your higher power or anything like that? So all of it and this God stuff, but I've said this before and I keep on saying, I was so relieved that whatever this God thing is, like, you know, like the fact that God was used in the same sentence as fuck, it was a get out for me. Like, I thought, whatever it is, like, none of them have grown wings, they're all ordinary people. And so whatever it is that they're connected to, maybe I'll be able to connect it to. My fear was that I would not be able to connect with whatever this thing was like, you know. I could understand all the material aspects of things, of not drinking and getting to meetings, etc. So anyway, that was great. So I went to meetings and I became the dishwasher. That was the only skill I had to offer. And And I felt wonderful. It was great. I had mates of mine in AA. Like, I remember Geordie, Jerry and Shuggy and myself, like, we all got bicycles. So we were kind of a slightly feral, to say the least. And we used to go down to sort of lovely sort of a tree-lined suburbs of London, like Surbiton. And there was an afternoon meeting down there on Sunday, like, and we'd turn up there, like, and oh, the women down there. It was a bit like the country, the Women's Institute or the Irish Country Women's Association or something like that. They made the most wonderful cakes and they welcomed us with open arms. It was absolutely wonderful. Like, and they and they'd say things like, oh, I've got sons like you. I'm not quite sure about that. Like, but anyway, they were lovely, very welcoming. And I always found that was the thing really that got me. The welcome I got in AA, like, was a was wonderful, and the worse you were, the more they welcomed you back. So I hung around and I went to meetings. I had no problem getting to 90 meetings in 90 days. I did that, and gradually I got my life together. Like, and I got socks and the underwear, and I remember getting a new bed and all of that sort of thing. Like, and tidying up the place and generally getting myself together, like, and all the while. But I got sober, like, when it was suggested to read the big book and all of that sort of thing, like, well, I wasn't capable of reading. Like, anything I was trying to read, you know, like, I it wasn't that I got to the end of the chapter and forgot what was in there. Like, by the time I got to the end of the line, I forgot what was at the beginning of the line. So I kept on going anyway. I don't know. I didn't drink a day at a time, and I went to meetings, I got involved. I became a dishwasher, as I say, and then we started a new meeting, and I became the treasurer. And I thought, isn't this wonderful? Upward mobility in AA. Like, there you go, from an unemployable dishwasher to an actual treasurer. Well, in actual fact, what happened there at that meeting was that one day I put my hand in my pocket and I'd spent all the money, so I had to go back to work then, go and find a job and get back to work. I really didn't. When I did read the big book, it was fine, but it didn't really speak to me. And I wasn't quite sure why it didn't speak to me. Later on, I came to realize why it didn't speak to me. It was because all the people, all the stories in there, they were all about people who lost something. They fell from a great height. Well, I started off with one foot in the gutter, like, you know, and I didn't fall from anywhere. I'd never achieved anything to lose anything, like. And then I realized all the stories, they were all WASPs, or all these white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. And I was a down and out sort of Irish failed Catholic. And so it was obvious I didn't identify with the stories in there. Some of the other stuff I thought I didn't really agree with. And not only I didn't identify with some, but later I came to realize the template of what an alcoholic is. That's Bill W's template of what an alcoholic is. And it didn't really ring any bells at all for me, not many anyway. I kind of worked out what my alcoholism was for myself eventually, a day at a time, staying away from a drink. So I didn't get sober from reading the big book. I didn't get sober from using a sponsor. I've never had a sponsor. I wrote an article on the Facebook page there yesterday on why I've never had a sponsor. And all of these people who have been sober for 40 odd years come in and say they've never had a sponsor either. Because the thing about sponsorship is it wasn't around very much when I came in. There was one guy who sponsored half the young men around this new meeting we started, like, and he was always asking wanting to be my sponsor. And I kind of couldn't stand the guy. He'd nothing to offer me. Anyway, I've never had a sponsor. Like, I was able to work things out for myself based on the fact of not drinking a day at a time, like, and I'm sober. And sober me is not a drinking me, like, you know, like, so some people might say I'm playing God, like, you know, but I'm not. I've been given these faculties and I'm told to think. So I started doing that after I came into AA. So what else then can I say? I've always been involved in AA. I've always had some involvement in AA at all levels. I've been involved at every level at AA, like, apart from a board member. And I think it's wonderful that us alkies, like, you know, we've got it in our power to be able to give a message to someone else to save them from that terrible dereliction and that dreadful life that we had before coming into AA. Like, because the medics don't have a cure for it, and the priests don't have a cure for it, the psychobabblers don't have a cure for it, and AA does have a cure for it, and it's all based on one alky talking to another. So all very simple. So that's the way I've kept it, like, and I say I've always done service. When I came into AA, I didn't have any aspirations really, like, in other than just, do you want what we have? No, thank you very much. I just want shot of what I have. And that's it, because there seemed to be an awful lot of aspirations of to become spiritually well, or like a middle class or bourgeois or something like that. All I wanted, in actual fact, what I wanted to do when I came into AA was just put a rucksack on my back and go along and tour around Connemara, walking around Connemara in summer. I didn't have the guts to do it. Like, it was freedom. That's what I wanted. Like, and because I wasn't drinking, like, I didn't have this constant need to sort of be in some places where I could get alcohol. Anyway, I never did that. So by and large, the whole business of sobriety, as far as I'm concerned, it's not drinking a day at a time, and the rest is conversation. I've done a step 4 and 5, which was the most powerful thing I've done since in my life outside of stopping drinking. It's a universal principle. It's kind of know yourself and be free. But I wouldn't have been able to get that without a. So thanks to when I came into AA, when I was in AA for 6 or 8 months or something, there's a man came into this new meeting I started one day, and he announced himself as an atheist. Now, this was the first atheist I'd ever met in AA who declared himself an atheist. At the time, I think I was probably a deist. And if God made the world, that's okay, but man made society. And he was an atheist. And anyway, I thought that's brilliant. And at the time, he was 25 years sober. And that gave me a lot of inspiration, like to carry on sort of down my own path. If he can stay sober, like with as an atheist, like, well, obviously it's possible. And so I just kind of, I evolved as an atheist. I'm not an atheist. God had nothing at all to do with me getting drunk or sober. Like God doesn't exist, like as far as I'm concerned. So I don't disbelieve. How can you disbelieve in something that doesn't exist? So there we are. So because I don't drink a day at a time, I get access to myself. It's often heard to say that like that drink is but a symptom of my illness. Well, as my old mate used to say, some fucking symptom. That's so by and large, like I often see alcohol as a my drinking alcohol was my illness. Before I started drinking, I was a right little shit, like, yes. And after I stopped drinking, like, I wasn't immediately sort of cured and fucking saintly or anything like that. But the thing about drinking was it kind of it prevented my maturing as a human being. It would put a stop to all of that, like, you know, like, and so when I stopped drinking, I was left with this probably 12-year-old boy, like, needing to grow up and have experiences sober. With all the each experience sober, all added to my repertoire of living sober, like, you know, and so therefore I defer to myself, like, because I know exactly what goes on, how I got to where I am. And it's very important to know how I got to where I am, to know the route out of where I am. I'm not depending on anything, but it's all my whole life, though, it's very much dependent on AA, like, well, I think it is anyway. I kind of keep on coming back. So that's me anyway there now, Mark. I'm going to stop there now. And thank you very much for having me, mate.